DNA haplogroups and the transfer agreement. New York Times best-selling author Edwin Black revealed bleak details about IBM and the Holocaust amid modern-day privacy concerns. The transfer agreement was Edwin Black's 1984 award-winning story of a negotiated arrangement in 1933 between Zionist organizations and the Nazis to transfer some 50,000 Jews, and $100 million, almost $1.7 billion in 2009 dollars, of their assets, to Jewish Palestine in exchange for stopping the worldwide Jewish-led boycott threatening to topple the Hitler regime. Sardonically, the UK was a definitive crisis profiteer of the transfer agreement. The British authorities required minimum assets of £1,000 for each Jewish immigrant to Palestine. The Nazi Havara transfer agreement undertaking was designed to help make possible the emigration of German Jews to Palestine. In 1933, the Nazi propagandist George Sylvester Viereck promised a settlement between the Third Reich and the German Jews similar to its concordat with the Vatican. The transfer agreement was signed on August 25, 1933, after 3 months of talks by the Zionist Federation of Germany, the Anglo-Palestine Bank, under the instruction of the Jewish Agency, and the trade and industry authorities of Nazi Germany. Whereas the transfer agreement helped many Jews emigrate, it forced them to provisionally surrender their possessions to Germany before departing. Those possessions could later be reobtained by transferring them to Palestine as German goods sold overseas. Author Edwin Black, himself a Jew, was disowned by his own mother, although they reconciled later. Editors have submitted Black's work 10 times for Pulitzer Prize nomination, and, in recent years, he has been the recipient of a series of top editorial awards. In 2003, Black received the International Human Rights Award from the World Affairs Council for his book, War Against the Weak, 2003 and 2012. A hair-raiser and an eye-opener exploring the dark side of eugenics, it contains details so vivid and horrid that one can hardly believe them. It is, at times, very difficult to read. In his studies, Edwin Black heard from Jewish scholar Rabbi Byron Sherwin of a long-rumored arrangement between the Third Reich and the Zionist organization involving the transfer of German Jewish assets to Palestine. I couldn't believe what I had heard. The possibility of a Zionist-Nazi arrangement for the sake of Israel was inconceivable for a person of my background. Both of Edwin Black's parents were Polish Holocaust escapees who survived in the forest for 2 years. They saw the state of Israel as the salvation and redemption of the remnant of the Jewish people. Yet there were incongruities I could never understand. Everywhere I looked in Israel, I saw German equipment. The icons of Nazi commerce Mercedes, Grundig, Siemens, Krupp were thriving in the Jewish state, even as the ban on Wagner's music was strictly enforced. And so many families were German Jews who had come to Israel during the Hitler era. For a year, I filed Rabbi Sherwin's rumor in a mental box of imponderables. He had said many times that the most important rule in approaching the Holocaust is that nothing makes sense. And yet I needed to make sense out of it. If I could, then perhaps there was a reason my mother and father had lived, while 6 million had died. Working through the staff and resources of Spertus College of Judaica, I was able to obtain some rare Hebrew and German materials that documented in skeletal form that the arrangement indeed existed. After a great deal of personal anguish, I made my decision. When I told my parents, my mother threatened to disown me and my father threatened to personally strangle me if I dared lend any credence to the notion of Nazi Zionist cooperation. This was done against a background of rising anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli attempts to somehow link the Nazi regime with Zionists. When I later showed my parents a 100-page summary of my proposed book, my mother cried and said, "Now I understand what I could never understand. Write the book." My father, who fought in the war as a Zionist Beder partisan, also gave me his blessing with the simple words, "Go write the book." Edwin Black, Chicago. February 27, 1984. The transfer agreement, so it seems, provokes cognitive dissonance or the mental discomfort experienced by anyone who holds two contradictory beliefs at the same time or is confronted by facts that conflict with existing beliefs. Perhaps it can be tersely summed up as the Sachs-Gotha paradox. The name Saxe-Coburg-Gotha refers to the German family of the ruling house of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha of Bavaria, which played many diverse roles in the dynastic and political history of Europe in the 19th and 20th centuries. At one time, in the beginning of the 20th century, before the First World War, it was the family name of the monarchs of the United Kingdom, Belgium, Portugal, Bulgaria, and Saxe-Coburg and Gotha. Today a branch of the family currently reigns in the United Kingdom, House of Windsor, and the other Commonwealth realms. The aloof Saxe-Gotha Nazis of World War II were well-known members of the royal family. In 1937 the Duke and Duchess of Windsor visited Germany and met Adolf Hitler. The Duke of Windsor, formerly King Edward VIII, abdicated his throne in 1936 to marry the American socialite Wallis Simpson. The Nazis planned to install the Duke as leader after a successful conquest of Britain. A former head of British naval intelligence said Hitler would soon be in this country, but that there was no reason to worry about it because he would bring the Duke of Windsor over as king. Princess Diana's biographer Andrew Morton uncovered the extent of Nazi King Edward's collusion with Hitler. In 2015, The Sun tabloid published 80-year-old pictures of 7-year-old Queen Elizabeth being taught a Nazi salute. Emily Windsor Cragg claimed to be the daughter of Edward and said the Führer was the Queen's own uncle, Wales Online, 2013. The Duke of Saxe-Gotha served as a brown shirt, SA, of the Nazi Party Reichstag from 1937 to 1945 and as president of the German Red Cross from 1933 to 1945, with a Nazi plan of enforced euthanasia that murdered 100,000 disabled people. Montagu Norman, 1st Baron Norman, the governor of the Bank of England from 1920 to 1944, was a close friend of the German Central Bank president Hjalmar Schacht. Schacht was an ardent supporter of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party and served in the Nazi government as president of the Reichsbank and Minister of Economics. Norman played a key role in transferring Czechoslovakian gold to the Nazis in March 1939. Kurt Nimmo, the British royal family supported Hitler and the Nazis, Global Research, May 23, 2014. Lord Halifax was obsessed with Hitler and Fabian Society socialist Sir Oswald Mosley served as the leader of the British Black Shirts, British Union of Fascists. There was furthermore shame in the 80s when Princess Michael of Kent's father, Baron Gunther von Reibnitz, was exposed as a former Nazi Party member and SS officer. Less well known is the fact that one of Prince Philip's sisters, Sophie, was married to Christopher of Hesse-Cassel, an SS colonel who named his eldest son Karl Adolf in Hitler's honor. Indeed, all four of Philip's sisters married high-ranking Germans. The prospect of the former Nazis and Nazi sympathizers attending his wedding to the Queen meant he was allowed to invite only two guests. Patrick Sauer, touchy subject of royal links with Nazi Germany, Evening Standard, January 13, 2005. The paradox of cognitive dissonance sets in once it is understood that the Saxe-Gotha Zionists were of the very same royal establishment. Like Prince Hans of Disney's Frozen, there is something appalling about finding out that a person who's won you over is unpleasant to the core. Hitler's Third Reich Germany encouraged Jewish emigration to Palestine. Throughout the 1930s, Royal Zionists and German National Socialists shared similar views on how to deal with the Jewish question. They agreed that the Jews and the Germans were distinctly different nationalities, and that Jews did not belong in Germany. During the 1930s Hitler's Germany did much to substantively further Zionist goals. Baron Leopolditz von Mildenstein, a member of the Nazi Party and of Hitler's SS, set out on a 1933 media hype tour of Palestine. German propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels issued a tribute medal with the Nazi swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other. A series of articles entitled Ein Nazi Feierreit nach Palästina, A Nazi Travels to Palestine began in September 1934 in Der Angriff, Goebbels' newspaper. It ran for 12 parts. Von Mildenstein saw in the Jewish settlement on the land a form of rebirth fitting Nazi notions about blood and soil, as well as a way of ridding Germany of Jews. But life was difficult in Palestine, and problems were looming, in Palestinian Arab resistance to Zionist colonization and British rule. Though the SS gave privileges to Zionists over other Jewish groups, assisting their youth movements, and giving them the right to wear uniform and fly the blue and white flag, von Mildenstein's own star faded amid rivalries and policy failures, while a man he had brought into the Jewish department came to the fore, one Adolf Eichmann. Charlie Potins, A Coin with Two Sides, Random Potins, May 4, 2007. In The Hidden History of the Balfour Declaration, Washington Report, November 2005, author John Cornelius shared his theory of a British Zionist trade whereby Zionists chaired by Chaim Weizmann assisted in bringing America into World War I and, in exchange, the British promised them Palestine. A matter we have not dealt with, but which needs to be considered, is the role of the British royal family in the Palestine-America trade. I have to confess to not knowing a great deal about the relationship between the British government and the royal family, but I find it impossible to believe that a matter so important as the trade could have taken place without the knowledge, and at least acquiescence, of the king. George V was king of England from 1910 to 1936. In April 1917, shortly before America entered the war, the king summoned the American ambassador, Walter Page, to an audience at Windsor Castle. In July 1917, he changed the name of the British royal family, which was German, to the English name, Windsor. Early in 1918, while the war was still in progress, it was decided to send a Zionist commission to Palestine, with Weizmann as chairman. Before its departure, in March 1918, Weizmann was granted an audience with the king, who is said to have wished him success in their endeavors. The audience was, of course, not given any publicity. Edward, the eldest son of George V, became Prince of Wales when his father became king, in 1910. He was 20 when the war broke out in 1914 and immediately joined the armed forces. Although he was protected from any situation which might have carried the risk of his being taken prisoner, he is said always to have identified closely with those of the war generation. He was destined to become king, and I feel certain that his preparation would have included his having been fully informed concerning the nature and circumstances of any commitment to the Zionists that the British government and his father might have made. He became King Edward VIII in 1936 but was forced to abdicate after a reign of less than a year, ostensibly because of his marriage to an American divorcee, Wallis Simpson, about whom ugly rumors were circulating. It is my understanding that the worst, if not all, of these rumors are now known to have been fabrications. It is also my understanding that Edward VIII showed a notable lack of enthusiasm for a second war with Germany. The present queen is the niece of Edward VIII and has no doubt also been fully informed concerning state secrets, as would have been her son, Prince Charles. John Cornelius, answering critics of the theory that Balfour Declaration was payoff for Zionist services in WWI, Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, September 1998. The king owned the Jews in Norman England, and their property was his property. They alone could lend money at interest. The king suffered their presence only so long as they served his interests primarily as a source of liquid capital. Perhaps the enigma of the Red Shield proved that specific sources were utilized as capital shields. Although they were helpers of the royal court, they served to deflect economic ill-feeling away from the King of England and thus set strict liability over feudal Jews. Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice, Shylock, was a stereotyped Jewish creditor. Outsiders in feudal society, both Anglo-Norman and continental, the Jews were not part of the network of land-based obligations. They could not own land. On the continent, they were owned as chattels by the local lords, who he held for the ultimate use of his lord. The Jews in Norman England, however, were within the exclusive domain of the king's personal control, living at his sufferance and according to his wishes. The first settlement of Jews in England came in the wake of William the Conqueror. William determined that he should be the sole owner of Jews in England. Others could own Jews only with the king's permission as expressed by royal grant. The underlying reality was that the Jews were no more than the embodiment of the king's accounts receivable. Jews were subject to periodic tillage and tithing when the king required them to turn over money that was held, ultimately, on his behalf. The king preserved the Jews and their investments as representing his own financial future. In accord with their traditional practice, when the Jews lent money, they did so under written credit agreements documented in the traditional form of the Shaders. Because of his relation to the Jews, the king had manifold interests in enforcing these Shaders. And, because what the Jews held, they held for the king, what the Jews lost through litigation or to an evasive debtor was lost to the king. Nor were these losses small, the Jews accumulated immense wealth through their money lending and the king's exchequer relied heavily on the Jews as an important source of tax revenues. And the king had an even more immediate stake in the revenues from court costs. When the debtor refused to pay, the king enforced the Jewish contracts through his royal court, at a cost of 1/10 to 1/6 of the sum at issue. Judith A. Shapiro, The Shaders' Effect on English Law, The Georgetown Law Journal, 1983. The German propaganda campaign to promote an Aryan race made use of various Ashkenazi Jews, including the ideal German soldier, the perfect Aryan poster child, and Eva the Führer's own mistress. News reports said it was all due to blunders by Joseph Goebbels' propaganda machine. But new facts suggested otherwise. In 1933, the Nazi regime began an IBM census of all Germans, aimed at identifying Jews, see page 269. The objective was to register information about the citizens of Germany, which IBM was to accomplish with punch card programs to categorize ethnic Jews, German conversions to Judaism, and Jewish deposit accounts. The alphabetically set its central name index contains over 50 million reference cards, see page 225. The exploitation of Ashkenazi players in Nazi propaganda advertising was probably programmed to break the spirit of the Nordic Jew. Ashkenazim who rejected Judaism and qualified for Aryan certificates, see page 429, were perfect Germans. Details of the Havre Agreement raised some worrying doubts. Did an influential group of German Jews who represented Zionism have undue privileges? While Russian Jews were hunted down as Bolsheviks and Sephardic Jews were sent to concentration camps with disadvantaged gypsies, why were some white Nordic Jews, Ashkenazim, free to parade in uniforms and show off political banners? In our time, the bearing of DNA analysis makes those uncertainties worth mentioning. Haplogroup is the term scientists use to describe branches on the genetic family tree of all humans. In the study of the ancestry of humans, scientists focus on haplogroups, or the classification of all humans into ancient family clans based on the unique pattern of genetic markers found in their DNA. A haplogroup is a genetic population group of people who share a common ancestor on the patrilineal or matrilineal line. With IBM punch card programs and an index of over 50 million reference cards, Nazi eugenicists presumed that many fair-haired Ashkenazim were of Norman, Frankish and Saxon origin not grouped to the Levant. Archaeogenetic laboratory analysis in England confirmed such a correlation in 2013. The analysis of mitochondrial DNA samples revealed that the Ashkenazim female line descended from southern and western Europe and not the Near East, see pages 157 to 159. Was the transfer agreement a living space, Lebensraum, plan to multiply Germanic haplogroups? The so-called truce that Hitler offered extended merely to a range of continental Sachsen Jews able to afford the required minimum assets paid to Britain for each settler to Palestine. But it took more than UK philanthropy to convince people to abandon their homes or possessions for a rough journey. When all else stopped working, was broken glass the last forewarning or collateral barter of hurried nation building? Niall Ferguson's House of Rothschild, Money's Prophets 1798-1848 was acclaimed by the New York Times. One of the most powerful families of modern times presided over the biggest banks in the world in various state ventures, including regime changes. Some traditionalists fancy a notion that the tribal Germanic messiah of religious Zionism or Lord of Israel, was Lord Rothschild not merely in allegory, but by the legal deeds of Balfour. In this unusual setting, Germanish Rockefeller was his prophet or voice in the wilderness. But the King of Kings that gave power to this special institution was the Royal Society of Saxe-Gotha, the British House of Windsor. Reich Minister of Propaganda Goebbels wrote of the abdicated Edward VIII, "It's a shame he is no longer king." DNA haplogroups relate to our deep ancestry and have no correlation to religion. The proliferation of inbred Germanic groups, in spite of creed, was the main purpose of the Nazi eugenics campaign. The push for a greater Israel is a test of Britain's great game to retain the Suez Canal and pave the way to Indochina. Perhaps Aryan racism was not intended to deify German lay people as such, but the reigning Saxe-Gotha paradox. The king owned the Jews.